Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson, along with Ryan Dobson and Lou Ann Crane.
Well, as we all can see, November is coming to a rapid close, and yet the ramifications of this past midterm election are still reverberating throughout the country, Ryan.
And people still have a lot of questions about what happened. How is it going to affect us here on the ground level? We need a reliable source of where we can get the truth. I hear it all the time. There are so many talking heads. I just don't know what to believe.
And I agree with that, Ryan. For the past few weeks, we've heard commentators and columnists and cable news people all weighing in on what the elections meant and what's in store for us in the future. And we really need to stop and reflect a little bit on the meaning of those elections and talk a little bit about, as I said, about the future.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most of the network anchors and news commentators are clearly biased in their interpretation, and that's why we thought it would be helpful to bring a very knowledgeable Christian leader to our studio today. He is a great friend of mine. I've known him for many years. He's Dr. Richard Land. And Richard, welcome to Family Talk.
Well, thank you. It's an honor and a privilege to be here.
You have served as the president of the Southern Baptist Convention's Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission for how many years?
22 years.
22 mm. years.
I was once a boy wonder. No longer.
You were also featured in Time magazine as one of the 25 most influential evangelicals in America. I think I was also on that list. And Dr. Land is an author and culture observer who has much to say to us. He has a doctorate of philosophy from Oxford University, and he hosts three nationally syndicated radio programs. His newest book is The Divided States of America, What Liberals and Conservatives Are Missing in the God and Country Shouting Match. It's been out since 2007, but the hardback edition is out of print, and a new paperback version with additional writings by Dr. Land will be released in
January.
Yes,
sir, it is, with a new introduction and an update where I deal with how things have changed and how they haven't changed between 2007 and now.
Mm.
And I wrote the book under the title of What Does God Have to Do with America? And, of course, you know publishers have the last word, so they let me keep America in the question mark. But we're down to only about 20 hardbacks left. And so we're going to do it in paperback, which will give us wider distribution. And we're excited about it. It's an equal opportunity offender. I have a chapter on what I think the conservatives are getting wrong. And I have a chapter on what I think the liberals are getting wrong. The one on liberals is a little longer than the one on conservatives. And I would say that if I were going to summarize it, I would say that what the conservatives are getting wrong is that they too often assume that God is on their side. And we can never assume that. We must do our best to be on God's side.
And Abraham Lincoln
that's
said
right,
that.
That's right. And the liberals too often assume God doesn't have a side. And, you know, I'm willing to acknowledge that when it comes to balance of payments or currency exchange, God may not have a side. But he's pro-life, he's pro-marriage, he's pro-family. And there are some salient issues that we have to deal with as a nation. And God has a side, and we need to be on it.
Now, liberals and conservatives are missing something. Is that what they're missing?
Mm-hmm. I think it's one of the things they're missing. I think that the conservatives, too often, you've heard it, you know, my country right or wrong, or, you know.
You call that idolatry.
It is. Right? It is idolatry, and it got Germany in trouble, and it would get us in trouble. If you put your country above God, that's idolatry. I love my country. My parents always taught me to love my country, but they taught me to love God more. And, you know, I hope I never have to make the choice that Dietrich Bonhoeffer had to make. But if I do, I pray to God I make the choice Bonhoeffer made. If I have to choose between God and country, I'm going to choose God.
Cost him his life.
It did. It did. The liberals, they either assume that God doesn't have a side when it comes to many of these issues or that he's irrelevant, or that because of a wrong understanding of the Constitution, they don't think that Christians have a right to bring that perspective to bear on public policy, and that's just discrimination against religion. And the only way it can continue is if we allow it to.
You said in this title that the publisher put on your book, The Divided States of America. Are we still as divided as we have been in recent years?
I think so. I think we're a fairly evenly divided country. The elections show this, starting with the 1960 election. I think the post-war consensus that was symbolized by Eisenhower ended. You've got people who have a 60s mentality. I think the president has a 60s mentality. Are far to the left of where traditional Americans are when it comes to their understanding of economics, their understanding of values, mm-hmm. their understanding of religion, their understanding of the role that America should play in the world. They see America as part of the problem mm-hmm. in the world. That's why Mr. Obama went on his apology tour. Mm-hmm. I thought we were going to have to give sedatives to my World War II veteran father when he bowed to the Emperor of Japan. Mm-hmm. I see America as part of the—
And to the King of Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. I see America as, you know, America's not perfect, but God helped the world in the 20th century if it hadn't been for the United States of America.
Do you believe in American exceptionalism?
I do. I do. And I talk about that in the book and what I mean by it. I don't think America's not God's chosen people. God has one chosen people, the Jews. But I do believe that it's impossible to read American history and come to an understanding that what has happened to us has been purely fortuitous. I believe it's providential that God, for whatever reason, has taken particular interest in what happens in the United States and that he has blessed America in unique ways. Now, a blessing, by definition, is unearned and undeserved, and it incurs responsibilities and obligations. For me, the doctrine of American exceptionalism is a doctrine of not of pride and privilege, but a doctrine of service and responsibility and of sacrifice in the name of freedom, that we are a country and we have interests, but we're also a cause, and that cause is freedom. And we have an obligation and a responsibility to help those around the world who want to be free to be free.
And we've done it.
We have.
I mean, we've paid a price for it.
We have. And it's the right thing to do. I think it's incumbent upon us. I mean, you think about the blessings that we have as Americans. And, you know, most of us haven't done much to deserve it. And yet God continues to bless us. And I believe that when people around the world are yearning for freedom, you know, what I'm saying is that what we say in the Declaration of Independence, that's not an American value. That's a universal value. That all men are created equal and that they're endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and that among those is the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And if people are given the choice, they will choose freedom. You know, we were told at the end of World War II that the Germans and the Japanese would never accept democracy, that Germany was a militaristic state, that democracy had been tried and failed, and that Japan was a feudal state. Well, then we as a country said, no, we're going to let the Japanese and the Germans decide this without somebody pointing a gun at them. And they have been two of the most stable democracies and two of the strongest allies of the United States and for the cause of freedom in the world ever since.
Richard, are you deeply concerned about this country and the direction that it's going, especially in the last 2 years in the Obama administration? I hope that's not too partisan, but that's the way I feel about it. Do you feel that way too?
Oh, I do. I do. I think that the spending is reckless. It's unsustainable. We are borrowing 40 cents of every dollar that we spend. And it's got to come to a stop. We've got to impose fiscal discipline upon this country, and that's going to require sacrifices from everyone. I'm also very concerned about what appears to me to be a lack of support for Israel. I think President Obama is playing a far more dangerous game than he knows when he appears to be dissing Israel. That does nothing but encourage Israel's enemies, who are our enemies, and discourage our friends. And it could lead to severe miscalculation and a great deal of bloodshed in the Middle East.
Along with a number of other things he's doing.
That's right. I went to the Glenn Beck rally in Washington, and it was an extraordinary experience. You know, there were 300,000 people there. And those people were there because they want to restore America. They believe that America took a wrong turn, and it wasn't a wrong turn in 2008. It was a wrong turn at the end of the 60s when we began to emphasize rights and privileges over obligations and responsibilities. And that's how you go from a 5% illegitimacy rate to a 41% illegitimacy rate. Mm. And that's how you go from to having 57% of our children now being reared in single-parent families. We're emphasizing our supposed rights and privileges at the expense of our obligations and responsibilities. Restoring America means restoring an America in which you keep your promises to your spouse, mm-hmm. you keep your promises to your children. You fulfill your obligations and responsibilities, and you understand that that's your responsibility. My son and I were watching a particularly graphic episode of Band of Brothers, and which is about the paratroopers who were in Europe in World War II, and they'd been hand-to-hand fighting between American paratroopers and German paratroopers. And at the end of it, one of the American soldiers says to the other one, he says, you know, the people back home will never understand what it cost us to win this war. And my son turned to me and he said, Dad, what made the greatest generation the greatest generation? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you know, as a baby boomer, that may be above my pay grade. Mm-hmm. But your grandfather was part of that generation. He was in the Pacific War from the beginning to the end. And I said, you know, first of all, almost all of them had their dads in the homes. Almost all of them grew up with their fathers in the home. And their fathers set an example for them, what it meant to be a man. Second, almost all of them went to somebody's church. And they got disciplined, sometimes physically, at home, at church, and at school. And they were taught at home, at church, and school that this was a great nation, that it was a privilege and an honor to be an American, and that this was with all of her flaws, this is the greatest nation in the history of the world and worth dying for. Mm-hmm. And lastly, they didn't get trophies for participating. They got trophies for winning. They were taught early that winning has consequences and losing has consequences, and there's a difference. And they also all worked. Most of them grew up on farms. They had chores.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a very different experience than the last two or three generations have had, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to fathers in the home. So we've allowed a generation of men, mainly, to walk away from their promises, to walk away from their responsibilities in pursuit of their supposed rights and privileges.
And that came in at the end of the 1960s.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's one of the legacies of the 60s.
That's exactly right. And I think that the moment is right, particularly with young people. They've seen the shipwreck that the sexual revolution has made of their parents and their grandparents and their aunts and uncles' lives. And they want something different. And it's up to us to tell them what that different is. I mean, that's why Rick Warren's book hit a chord. You know, who would have thought a book that says it's not about you? Well, I think we've sort of plumbed the depths of self-actualization and self-fulfillment, and people have not found there what they thought they were going to find. And I think particularly young people are looking for a cause greater than themselves, and they're looking for people who will stand up and say, you know, we need to have honor. We need to keep our promises. Mm-hmm. There needs to be a moral symmetry restored in the country where exemplary behavior is rewarded and less exemplary behavior is punished.
Mm-hmm. You were saying earlier, you're talking about marriage, and when you look at the number of people who live together before they get married, it's unreal. People seem to want to test drive their relationships. They don't want to commit to someone for better or for worse. They want to have some kind of a performance evaluation in their vows of marriage, where if you're making me happy or you're making me feel fulfilled, then I'll stay with you. But the minute things start to go south, that's it. I'm out. And too many people, too many Christians are bringing that kind of attitude into their marriage relationship. And I think we need to tell people you have to be committed for life.
I think that's right. And I think we have to acknowledge when you look at the divorce rate in this culture, and you look at the fact that the percentage of people who claim to be born-again Christians has been going up from 31%, Barna says, in 1981 to 45% today, that at least in the area of sex and marriage, instead of being salt and light, we've been salted and lit. The culture's influenced us more than we've influenced the culture. And it's time for every church in America to become a consciously pro-marriage counterculture. We need to have far better premarital counseling, and we need to make it very clear to people when they get married, they're making promises to God Almighty, not just to each other. And we need to reject this casual attitude toward divorce.
Yeah.
And it starts with the church. It ain't going to be fixed without churches all across this country. I know you know about Mike McManus's Marriage Savers
sure
program.
Do.
I mean, that shows what can be done. 50% reduction in divorce in communities where the clergy have gotten together and done his program. Hmm. That's a pretty good statistic.
Richard, you said that the younger generation is starting to understand that something's missing here and they're reaching mm-hmm. for something more. And yet they're not involved politically. Mm-hmm. How come? They seem to not recognize the responsibility that or the opportunity yeah. that the founding fathers gave us.
Well, I think that's changing some. I think that particularly with the economy and the shape that it's in, I mean, it's really hitting younger people harder than it's hitting anybody else. I mean, because they're not jobs and there's not, you know, the opportunity for advancement because the economy's not growing. And I think a lot of them, you know, Barack Obama in 2008 was sort of a human Rorschach test. Everybody saw in him what they wanted to see. And a lot of them saw in him, you know, he was going to remember, he said he was going to have a new kind, he was going to have a purple America, not red or blue, a post-partisan presidency. He was going to have total transparency. Well, of course, none of those things have come true. I mean, he's been exactly the opposite of the way he campaigned. And I think a lot of younger people are disillusioned, and they're looking for people who are going to stand up and tell it like it is, and I think call them to a cause larger than themselves.
What do you think he meant by having a transformational presidency?
Well, I think Barack Obama, when he said during the campaign, "I want to remake America," you know, this is a man who uses words carefully. He meant remake, not rebuild. A lot of Americans heard rebuild, but what he meant was remake. I believe he is a committed leftist. I believe he wants to make us more like France. He's far more concerned about redistributing income than he is about increasing wealth, about growing more wealth to share. I believe that he sees America as he's got a very 60s mentality when it comes to America's role in the world. He sees America as part of the problem, not part of the solution. I think he wants to weaken our role in the world. I think he thinks that will make the world better. That we've been sort of the bully of the world, which is, in my opinion, absolute nonsense. I think that he is not going to triangulate. You know, he said, you remember, he made the Clintons very mad when he said, "I don't want to be a president like Bill Clinton. I want to be a president like Ronald Reagan, who changed the trajectory of the country." Well, Ronald Reagan did that. I mean, Ronald Reagan changed the trajectory of the country as much as Roosevelt had. I mean, Roosevelt, what Reagan did was undo Roosevelt's vision for America and restore free enterprise and restore, you know, pride in America and America's role in the world. He's the first president to come in committed to the end of the Soviet Union. He really believed that they were the past and we were the future and that they were going to end up on the ash heap of history and that it was his responsibility to give them a good hard shove. And he did. And thank God for it, because the Soviet Union was the evil empire. This president wants to change the moral trajectory of the country. He wants to undo welfare reform. He wants to have socialized medicine. He said when he was running for senator, "I believe the best system for the country is a single payer national health system, but we can't get there in one step. It'll take several steps." Well, Obamacare is the first giant step in that direction. And I do believe that he is a conviction politician, like George W. Bush was. He's not going to triangulate like Bill Clinton did. Bill Clinton just wanted to be president. You know, I mean, he's sort of a happy narcissist. He just wanted to be president and be the center of attention. I think that Barack Obama is as committed to his values and his ideals as George W. Bush was. And he's willing to be a one-term president. He would rather not be, but he's willing to be a one-term president and get things done than be a two-term president and not get things done.
Well, that scares me.
That well, it
scares
it,
me
it
because
does
the
me
direction
too.
He's taking us is not a good thing.
Well, if he gets a second term, by the end of that second term, we will be permanently damaged in terms of the future. I mean, he can do that much damage to our future economy. I mean, there are things that can be done structurally that will make it virtually impossible for us to recover in our children's lifetimes.
Luann, I think we need to tell everyone there's a reason why we can talk openly about Barack Obama, which we couldn't if we were in an election mm-hmm. season. Mm-hmm. And we're not. We're past one. And so we have the freedom as a 501c3 to talk about these things. And that's what we're trying to do today. And
at least right now we have that right.
Yeah.
We better be eternally vigilant.
Did you see that Senator Rockefeller said recently that we need to get rid of Fox News mm-hmm. and MSNBC? Mm-hmm. They're going to limit what the American mm-hmm. people are told or can
hear. Well, Al Gore tried
hear.
This. You know, back when Al Gore was vice president, they tried to stack the FCC and take off any religious programming that was other than educational. You know what that means.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyone who was preaching the Bible, anyone who was talking about biblical values and applying them to the culture would have been off the air.
Well, the truth of the matter is they're still stung by the results of the election, and they don't want it to happen again. Mm-hmm. So they want to get rid of Rush and Sean mm-hmm. and Mark Levin and all the rest of them.
Liberals function much better in a monopoly.
They do at that.
Dr. Land, you've pointed out very well that there really was that shift in mm-hmm. the 60s. I have two children in their 20s right now. Are you optimistic, though, that because of all this overreaching and everything that's come to light, that we are beginning to shift that next generation to see the reality of what's going on?
Yeah, I do. I do. First of all, it's more pro-life than any generation in American history. Mm-hmm. Of course, the reason for that is that we've had abortion on demand now for 37 years. Mm-hmm. And pro-life parents had their babies, and they raised them to be pro-life. And we know that pro-choice parents often don't have their babies, so they don't raise them to be anything. There's a 41% fertility gap in America between couples who describe themselves as conservatives and those who describe themselves as liberals. Hmm. Now, this begins to show up over time. The states that Bush carried in 2000 got 7 electoral votes in the census, and the states that Gore carried lost 7. The states that Bush carried in 2004 are on schedule to get 9 more electoral votes after the 2010 census, and the states that Kerry carried are going to lose 9. Mm-hmm. That's 16 electoral votes in 2 censuses. That's in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Bush carried the 25 states with the highest birth rate in 2004. Kerry carried the 18 states with the lowest birth rate, and the average difference in birth rate was 12%. Now, that begins to add up. And so you're having a higher percentage of this generation are being raised in mm-hmm. conservative, pro-family homes. And I think that there is a real possibility that we can help them understand that we do have an answer, and it's a better answer than the one that the culture is giving them. We also have, and this is one of our great hopes, we have a higher percentage of American young people who have been educated in Christian schools or homeschooled than at any time since the end of the Civil War.
So you are seeing those values mm-hmm. being
so you've
passed.
Got, and they're going to be the leaders. I mean, mm-hmm. these homeschoolers are getting into Harvard and Yale, and they're doing better mm-hmm. than people who are in private schools, much mm-hmm. less public schools. And so I think that you're beginning to see, among the strongest pro-life voting bloc in the country are young people.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Richard Land is our guest. There are times when the brevity of this program really bugs me. I complain about it every day because it just goes by so fast. There are a lot of things I want to talk to you about, and let's invite you back for another day if you're willing to do so.
I'd be happy to do so.
What I'd really like to do with tomorrow's program is to analyze the results of the November 2nd national elections and then speculate about what they mean for the future.
I'd be happy to do that.
The title of the book is The Divided States of America. You said that you wanted a different title.
Mm-hmm.
On this book, and it is?
It was, what does God have to do with America? And my answer is quite a lot.
Let's start with that next time, shall we? Mm-hmm. I appreciate you, Richard. You're a great friend of mine, and you've got a really wonderful perspective on the country and where we are, and we need to hear more of it. So we'll pick it up next time.
Thank you.
Well, I agree, Dad. This program absolutely flew by. I can't wait to hear what Dr. Land has to share with us tomorrow. If you can't be with us live with your local radio station, you can always download the podcast or stream it live at myfamilytalk.com.
Or you can always get a CD copy. Ryan, just give us a call for that. 877-732-6825.
Mm-hmm. And just a quick reminder, Family Talk is totally supported by your donations. There have been so many people that have joined with us as we've started this new ministry, but we really need more people that can partner with us on a regular basis.
Ryan, we have so appreciated those that have already stood with us, and of course, all of you who are praying for us and the work we're doing here on a regular basis. You can donate at myfamilytalk.com. or when you call. And when you're on the phone today, ask about how you can get on Dr. Dobson's Christmas card list. With Thanksgiving behind us, we are all looking ahead to Christmas time now.
That's right. This Christmas card is going to be a great one. I've seen the photo. I think our listeners are really going to like it. Once again, our number is 877-732-6825. And don't miss the continuation of our conversation with Dr. Richard Land next time.